go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minute past the hour, and we begin this Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is, of course, our home. That's where you go if you want to jump in and be a part of the chat room conversation, which is a darned interesting and enjoyable event on any given night of the program. We're live in the chat room from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Monday through Friday. Good crowd forming up already. Good evening, Jan. Good evening, Labor Man. Good evening, Texas T. Good evening, Will. And, of course, good evening to our inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Yeah, everything's working this evening. It turned out in later conversation with Ben Birch last night, we were just having server update issues, but the servers seem to be happy now. And we hope they will remain that way. Very good news. We were in a bit of a crisis as of yesterday evening, and someone, I know not whom, someone alerted Mike and Kathy Malloy to this fact, and they in turn alerted the Truth Seekers. The Truth Seekers turned on the bat signal, and the crisis has been averted. And profound, profound thanks are going out. I've been writing a whole bunch of thank you emails, and I just want to take a moment, if that's okay, take a moment here as we begin the program to offer up an on-air thanks to Joan and to Jeff and to William and to Anthony and Jean and Bruce and Ellen and Robert and Franz and Matt and Ryan and Thomas and Jean Ann, to Captain Mary, to our old pal Gunny Bob, Glenn, Anne Marie, Jeffrey, Stalwart, Kate, William, Bob, Mark, Roy, Matthew, George, Kim, our old friend Linda, David, Carol, Kathleen, our buddy Jack, our pal Darcy. See what I mean? Leo, Kath, and Kath, of course. Thank you very kindly, one and all, for helping to save this little effort, this little online effort that that y'all have kept going for pretty near 10 years now. The official 10th anniversary of what we're doing here passed back in February. The 9th anniversary of the online only effort will come in October. But overall, this has been going on for 10 years. And it would not happen. It absolutely would not happen without you. So thank you one and all to everybody who jumped in to keep things going. It's deeply inspiring, and it is humbling. And my deepest and profound and abiding respect and love goes out to Mike and Kathy for making it happen. Because, see, we wouldn't be here tomorrow otherwise. Thank you, everyone. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. I am Bob Kincaid. For those of you who checked in last night and who might be listening this evening, yeah, hi, I'm Bob. Hopefully you'll find a reason to hang around and be a part of the conversation and enjoy it. We've built quite a little community here over the years, and it is centered on conversation and personal interaction. You can always listen. You can listen live. You can the podcasts are available for you at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for this program. The podcast feed is there. I also want to put out a special thanks to our buddy Scott in Sweden, who helped out immensely, and to our dear friend Tom. Tom is in the Bay Area. You've heard from Tom frequently in the past, and he is a longtime supporter of the program. And I got a note from Tom yesterday, just before airtime. And this was kind of special. Because, there's a valedictory quality to Tom's note, and I'm pulling it up right now on the very tired, very ancient computer. The subject line was a contribution on the way. And Tom wrote, "I haven't been able to listen recently because my mother passed away a week ago. In her honor, I'm putting in the mail a $300 contribution, which I hope can round out whatever other funds you're able to raise, and maybe anything else can help to replace some equipment. Mom was a lifelong liberal, and I think she'd be pleased with what you're doing. She once told me that it wasn't until she went away to college that she realized that damn and Democrats were two separate words." Tom continues, "My younger brother wrote a beautiful obituary that I'm attaching. You may read it on the air or not as you think appropriate." I like that. I like that line about damn Democrats. But no, in fact, since Tom is helping out as a memorial to his mom, I think it is more than fitting that we share her obituary, because Tom's brother did do a magnificent job. You may recall, just to put everything in context, Tom is the one who is the man who fulfilled a lifelong dream during the time that I was out in San Francisco by inviting me aboard his beautiful sailboat for a quick afternoon's jaunt around the bay. And that remains with me, and it is the whole idea of sailing it's not bucket list stuff, because it's not something I want to do right before I kick same said bucket. I'd like to live that way. But anyway, we had a beautiful, beautiful afternoon's excursion out on San Francisco Bay, and it will long remain in my memory. There were a couple of photographs taken while I was out there, and I was just grinning as big as a human being could grin. That was there for a reason. At any rate, Anne stepped off this mortal coil July 13, 2014, a generous and loving wife, mother, grandmother, and her own inimitable self. She was born and raised in Dayton, Ohio, graduated from Smith College, and after earning a master's degree in Byzantine history at the University of Michigan, oh, be still my heart, returned to Dayton, where she married Bill, who she once described as the handsomest man in school. In 1956, she and Bill moved to Pacific Palisades, California, to raise their family, where she was a longtime parishioner at St. Matthew's Church, then retiring to Mendocino, California in 1985 before finally moving to San Rafael in 2008. An independent, thinking, and interested person, Anne instilled solid values and a sense of citizenship in her children, along with a vast supply of family stories and history, and a love of reading and the arts, always infused with a no-nonsense yet common-sense can-do attitude and fun, always encouraging exploration and curiosity. She was a casual but talented and profuse artist, enjoying many different media from drawing and painting to sculpture and even frescoes. Anne freely donated her time and talents teaching at St. Matthew's and later at Discovery Room at Venice Elementary School. Aldersley residents will surely miss her rotating gallery of photographs in the hallways and elevators there. Always possessed of an adventurous streak, Anne visited Guatemala in the 1960s with her sister Elizabeth on an archaeological expedition and enjoyed many years of sailing in Californian and Mexican waters with family and friends. In their retirement, she and Bill ventured farther abroad to Europe, the Caribbean, and both polar regions. She once described crossing the roaring 40s and the furious 50s in storm conditions on the way home from Antarctica as one of the grand experiences of her life. At times, Anne had differing political views from her husband, which led to an occasional lively discussion at the family dinner table, by example teaching all present the value of knowledge, critical thinking, and above all, balance, tolerance, and respect for the opinions and feelings of others. Anne is preceded in death by her brother Keith, sister Elizabeth, and husband Bill. She is survived by her children Dick, Tom, Beth, and Marshall, and her grandchildren Jenny, Nat, and Ian, all of whom will retain many precious memories. And I feel like Tom shared some of those with us, too. And, oh, the Roaring 40s, the Furious 50s, an archaeological dig in Guatemala, a degree in Byzantine history? Here then, is the resume of a life very well lived indeed. So our warmest and fondest thoughts to you and your whole family, Tom, for sharing that with us and for sharing, well, the fact that Though grieving, you are celebrating a life magnificently lived on this planet. Thank you. Thank you. 13 minutes past the hour here in the Horn Studio Sauna. Hi, Janie. And otherwise known as the Horn Solar Furnace. And I think the poor little window unit air conditioner is just about ready to say, screw it, I quit. But that's okay. It's, you know, it's supposed to be. Well, I don't know how supposed to be this way it is, because frankly, when it gets up past 95 degrees or so in Appalachia, we begin to look at each other and wonder, you know, what did we do wrong? Well, there's a lot we've done wrong in Appalachia, really. I mean, being as how we're the cradle of climate change and everything, aplenty. But no, it's blazing hot, and the humidity, you can pretty much lick the air if you want to. But I was thinking about this earlier today, not just because I was sitting in here sweating like a porcine human, but because I was thinking about climate change. Before we jump into the Titanic Tuesday portion of the program, I wanted to share something with you. You can find this over at Huffington Post. It is by a man named Trip Van Noppen. It is worth the time it will take to read. The title of it is EPA Court Victories Pile Up. It's time to end mountaintop removal. Trip Van Noppen is the executive director of an organization called Earth Justice, among whom I count many, many friends. They are I can't say enough good about Earth Justice because they get the idea of the grassroots probably better than any other large environmental organization that I have ever come in contact with. Earth Justice, for instance, has been crucial in supporting our efforts at passing the AIC Act, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, presently in the House as H.R. 526. The only bill, there is no other, the only bill with the power to end mountaintop removal coal extraction in Appalachia. And so it was that I was alerted today by my dear friend Liz, who is involved in communications with Earth Justice, that Trip Van Noppen had penned an opinion piece that's published at Huffington Post. Again, EPA court victories pile up. It's time to end mountaintop removal. Trip Van Noppen writes, on July 11th, a D.C. federal court vindicated the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's attempt to finally start bringing more scrutiny to the problem of mountaintop removal. A federal appeals court overturned a lower court's decision and ruled that EPA was within its authority to take a closer look at this most extreme form of coal mining, coordinate with the other agency involved in the mine permitting process, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and guide its field staff to use sound current science. Now that courts have told the mining industry interest to get out of the way, it's time for EPA to step up and do more to protect communities. And when I read that single sentence, I just stood there and, yay, hooray, yes, absolutely. Enough with the half measures. All of this, after all, is part of the critical job Congress gave the EPA with the passage of the Clean Water Act in 1972. Protect the American people, our communities, and our waterways. If you wonder why the American people would need a federal agency charged with protecting them, look no further than mountaintop removal mining. And by the way, this piece is loaded with links that you can travel to get a really, really solid handle on what we're talking about here if you don't already have one from years of listening to this program. Mountaintop removal, Trip Van Noppen explains, is an extreme method of coal extraction in which entire mountains are blown apart, nearby waterways are buried by valley fills, and communities are shaken, devastated, and displaced. There is no way to rebuild a mountaintop or a stream once lost. They are gone for good. But more than mountains and streams are lost. 22 peer-reviewed scientific studies, otherwise known as nearly two dozen, have linked mountaintop removal to increases in birth defects, certain kinds of cancer, and early death for the people who live near those mine sites. For a long time, Appalachian community groups have been telling the rest of the nation, this mine is killing us. Now, tragically, there's an extensive body of science telling us this is much more than rhetoric. It's never been rhetoric for us. It's hard to get rhetoric. You know what? It's hard to go to a rhetorical funeral. It's hard to pay a rhetorical visit to a hospital. It's hard to breathe poisonous rhetorical air. And this is not aimed at Trip. This is just reality. He's right. These are not rhetorical complaints. Those are not rhetorical graves where our dear friends Larry Gibson and Judy Bonds reside. Or my brother and colleague Bo Webb's lovely wife Joanne. Or all the countless others the 4,000 statistical excess deaths that happen in mountaintop removal counties every year. Every year. There's nothing rhetorical about it. Tripp Van Noppen continues, this huge court victory should tamp down overheated and misleading coal industry attacks against the EPA. It should, but it won't. And I'm not naysaying Tripp. I'm just suggesting that the coal industry does not behave with honor. They behave with avarice. And avarice trumps all in the coal industry and has for 125 or more years. Just a fact. Or as we say it around here, because money. The industry tried to stand in the way of every attempt to address the extreme practice and pollution of mountaintop removal mining, and unfortunately, states such as West Virginia and Kentucky have become creatures of that industry. Andy, she called me a creature. No. Everything's a television reference. What am I going to do? But we are. The state government of West Virginia is a wholly owned, and large, the same with Kentucky, and to a certain extent Virginia, not so much, and not so much in Tennessee, but enough to be harmful. But West Virginia and Kentucky state governments are wholly owned subsidiaries of the coal industry, a coal industry that isn't even doing that much for the state anymore. This is like some sort of fiefdom where the prince is ailing and gone half mad with tertiary syphilis, but continues somehow to maintain a hold. I mean, less than, 7% of the gross state product of West Virginia comes from coal. There are less than 15,000 coal miners. Around 4,000 of those are mountaintop removal workers. There are more Walmart workers, and I'm no fan of Walmart. There are more Walmart workers in West Virginia than there are coal miners. Or mountaintop removal workers, certainly. As we have noted frequently, there are more florists in West Virginia than there are mountaintop removal workers. That's important because we need the florists to supply the floral arrangements for the people who die from mountaintop removal. Unfortunately, Tripp Van Noppen has said, states such as West Virginia and Kentucky have become creatures of that industry, joining the fight against the EPA and working harder to protect coal's profits than their own residents. For instance, we have ourselves a nasty little, it's not that nasty, but it's a Senate battle going on in the 2014 midterm elections. Jay Rockefeller, a dependable Democratic vote, is finally retiring. The man is not in good health. And there is a battle on for his seat, a battle which will likely, unless things change dramatically, be won by the daughter of the single most corrupt Republican governor West Virginia has ever had, Arch Moore. So crooked, you had to be screwed into the dirt. Is he dead yet? I don't know. Arch was convicted of being a crook and sent to federal prison for it. But enough about him. Let's talk about this. So what's going on is Shelley Moore Capito, his daughter, a woman who laughed about the Freedom Industries disaster, they're past masters when it comes to pandering to the coal industry. I mean, there is no pander too far for a member of the Moore family. There is no amount of abasement, there is no amount of falsehood, there is no amount of duplicity that a member of the Moore family will not engage in to satisfy the coal industry. Nonetheless, the Democratic nominee for the Senate from West Virginia, a young woman who is presently Secretary of State named Natalie Tennant, is trying to outpander Representative Shelley Moore Capito. She is failing in the polls badly. And why should it be any surprise? Have we not learned from 2010 and 2012 that trying to out-Republican a Republican is a sure loser? Why would a Republican vote for Republican light when they can get the real deal? It's like the choice between 3.2 near beer and real beer. Drink the real beer. 3.2's like sex in a canoe. You know, it's effing close to water. But nonetheless, Natalie continues to try to pander to the coal industry and the coal people, and she's going to cost us a Senate seat by doing so. And those are the people, and for instance, the reason I brought that up is that Natalie Tennant, the Democratic nominee, has been running around this state saying, "I'll stand up against the EPA and that Obama." Wow. So she's going to be soft on the coal companies, mean to Obama, hates the EPA, won't stand up for regulations to support sick people, but somehow or another she's going to be really, really good and progressive on women's issues. Hint, if you can't speak up for women who are being poisoned by mountaintop removal, you're not going to be good on women's issues. Because women in mountaintop removal communities who are being poisoned are still women. But I digress. Back to Trip Van Noppen's article. In this one case alone, the coal industry and its friends challenged, one, the EPA's attempt to coordinate its review of about 100 of the worst pending permits with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. In the decision, U.S. Circuit Judge Brett Kavanaugh, a Bush appointee, highlighted the absurdity of the coal industry's complaint about two federal agencies consulting and coordinating with each other. No, really, the coal industry said that, well, the EPA can't be talking to the Army Corps, and the Army Corps can't be talking to the EPA. That's communism or something. Judge Kavanaugh asserted, the right hand should know what the left hand is doing. Of course, setting up a wall between the two agencies responsible for regulating mountaintop removal mines makes it easier for the coal industry to get away with egregious dumping practices and evade deserved scrutiny, but this attempt, thankfully, failed. Two, a document the EPA wrote to inform its own staff about the latest water science, called conductivity guidelines, which shows severely degraded water quality downstream, creating an environment incompatible with the most basic elemental forms of stream life. When scientific facts might stifle profits, the industry does what it can to make the science disappear. Thankfully, the science prevailed here. This is, of course, a circuit court decision. I don't know yet whether or not whether the coal industry will take this on up to the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, and that Kennedy guy, at the Supreme Court. To date, with this latest court decision, all of the industry's lawsuits challenging EPA's authority on mountaintop removal mining have failed, vindicating the Obama administration and the EPA. And so the time has come. The Obama administration and the EPA need to stop mountaintop removal mining. Just stop it. Enough. Quit it. You know, from time to time I've mentioned one of my very, very favorite modern science fiction novels. It's called Altered Carbon by a man named Richard K. Morgan. And in it there is a passage by the revolutionary that he invents to advance the plot named Quelchrist Falconer. And it's the name of the monologue has been given is Make It Personal. Well, this is personal. And even if you don't live in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone, this is personal. It's very personal. Because you may know somebody. Hello. But there's, without giving away any plot, because if you've never read it, you like science fiction, you probably should read it. It's wonderful. It's like a noir detective novel meets cyberpunk. Just awesome. And so... So what happens is there's a passage where he's talking about the revolution. This is hundreds of years in the future. And he talks about this one character who finally It's too much. But anyway, the line is, that's effing enough. And that's where we are with mountaintop removal. That's effing enough. And that's what the Obama administration and the EPA need to figure out. That's effing enough. More than 500 mountains destroyed. More than 2,000 miles of streams buried. 4,000 excess deaths per year. That's effing enough. Stop it. For good. Yes, there are 4,000 jobs to be dealt with. You know what? This is America. I'm guessing we could find a way to retrain 4,000 workers. It's been done in the past. Or they could move to somewhere where they need somebody to drive a D9 Caterpillar around on a moonscape for a while. It can be done. Our good friend Preston in Denver sent me an article not long back talking about young people out there trying to midwife the Appalachian transition away from a toxic coal-based mono economy. There's a lot of talk about that these days, and it's talk that's been a long time coming. The trick is it needs to be more than talk. Anyway, back to Trip Van Noppen. And so the time has come. The Obama administration and the EPA need to stop mountaintop removal mining. Though the court ruled that these actions are within the EPA's authority, they are still not nearly enough. It's time for the EPA to take definitive action to end this extreme form of mining. The president and the EPA together must stop allowing the use of our waters as mining waste dumping grounds. The EPA must set serious and enforceable water quality requirements for pollution from mountaintop removal. Because remember, even if we stop it tomorrow, the poison is going to continue to flow. And for once in this nation's history, I would like to see a polluter, a poisoner. Pollution just sounds so esoteric. A poisoner continue to be held responsible. By God, they want to be U.S. citizens. I want to chase them down when they screw up. Just like we chase down somebody who's violated a drug law, for instance. I want us to be able to go and pick up coal company executives or former coal company executives. I want us to be able to go out and round them up the way we do little children from Guatemala. Reckon? Yeah. The EPA must set serious and enforceable water quality requirements for pollution from mountaintop removal. The president, the EPA, and all federal agencies must make the science linking mountaintop removal mining to cancer, birth defects, and deaths a vital part of their deliberations. And the EPA should exert its authority over mountaintop removal permits more forcibly and more often. Congress shouldn't wait either. It needs to step up and pass the Appalachian, and this is my favorite paragraph. Because see, the Sierra Club's never said this. The Natural Resources Defense Council has never said this. The Environmental Defense Fund has never said this. Greenpeace has never said this. Appalachian Voices has never said this. Just our friends at Earth Justice. Congress shouldn't wait either. It needs to step up and pass the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act, H.R. 526, which would halt this type of mining until more is known about its health impacts. Mountaintop removal mining is an extreme, dangerous act that must be ended, and with this vindication, the president and his EPA must be the ones to end it. Thank you, Trip Van Noppen, for being the friend that you are. Thank you, Earth Justice, for everything that you do to try to make things better here. Thank you. The organization is sadly all too, that kind of organizational behavior is sadly all too rare. Doesn't have to be, though. And, of course, I remind you that if you want to help advance the AIC Act, you can go to AIC Act, AICHEACT.org. There's a widget there you can use to contact your members of the House and Senate. Our primary focus right now, as this miserable, sad, sorry, pathetic, walking, talking, barely breathing dysfunction of a Congress lurches toward its merciful end, the 113th Congress, our effort is to try to get this bill introduced in the Senate. So you can reach out to your members of the Senate. Reach out, if you're in Vermont, to Bernie Sanders, Patrick Leahy. If you're in California, reach out to Barbara Boxer. She's the head of the Environment Committee, for crying out loud. Reach out to Dianne Feinstein. I know. Reach out anyway. Reach out in Virginia to your two Democratic senators. Reach out to Sherrod Brown in Ohio. Reach out to Debbie Stabenow and Carl Levin in Michigan. Reach out to Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin. Reach out. Reach out to Patty Murray in Washington. Reach out to, he's such a good one on the environment, in Oregon. I'm sorry. I apologize. It can be done. It really can be done. It will not be done in Appalachia, though, because we've got Joe Manchin with his vice presidential ambitions and fabulous hair. And his balance. John D. Rockefeller, J. Rockefeller, my other senator, the one who's retiring in ill health, even though he's sick, he doesn't quite, hasn't found the courage to do anything about the health crisis in mountaintop removal communities. Kentucky, Rand Paul, Mitch McConnell, woohoo! Yeah, no, that ain't happening there either. But you know what? If you're in Tennessee, you can reach out to Lamar Alexander. Because he hates, say anything else, credit where credit's due. Lamar Alexander and Bob Corker, too. Go figure. Well, no, there's nothing hard to figure out here. They've got a massive tourism economy in Tennessee, and they don't want it ruined by a bunch of guys running around with dynamite. They're Republicans, and they both despise mountaintop removal. Are you in Tennessee? Reach out to them. Tell them you want the AIC Act introduced in the Senate. And you know what? Even if you don't have Democratic senators, write them too. At least let them know that you're paying attention. And again, EPA court victories pile up. It's time to end mountaintop removal. If you play the social media game, go to Huffington Post and share this. Please. I'll make it a little bit easier. I have just shared it to my Facebook page, so you can go and share it from there. Bob Kincaid on Facebook. Now, it's about 21 minutes before the hour, and we've got a lot of work to do because, you know, Titanic Tuesday, I might remind you, is the day of the week when we celebrate the Titanic intellect of the right wing. It is named for, a 962nd tier right-wing blatherer from here in southern West Virginia who, taking a call from one of his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking followers one day, was presented the question by said knuckle-walking mouth-breather, otherwise known as a booger-eater, to the effect of, "Well, Steve, why is it that these fossilized shellfish in them rocks in the mountains of West Virginia?" To which the 962nd tier right-wing talker said, "Well, caller, That's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. Uh-huh. No, really. Titanic plates. No words yet on the movement of the Titanic finger bowls, but the Titanic plates. Oh God. So anyway, Titanic Tuesday on the Horn is a celebration of right-wing stupidity. And that we shall do, because we got some really big examples of right-wing stupid this evening. I'm not talking about your garden variety, little right-winger shouting some epithet in a movie theater in Mississippi. That's the easy stuff. By the way, a note coming in from out Oregon way. And this is, I remind you, we've been talking about this. For some reason, it captured all of our attention and imagination. The Roland Coe diesel doofuses. The guys, and they're guys, come on, please, who modify their pickup trucks, their diesel pickup trucks, to belch out great clouds of toxic, ultra-fine, particulate matter-laden diesel smoke on unsuspecting pedestrians, bike riders, and especially Prius drivers. Hence, subject line of the email, smack the Kohler bitch down. It happened today. I spotted my first coal-rolling idiot. Big-ass truck with dual stacks. I just happened to see him and then placed a call to an old cop I used to work with, whom I knew was on duty. Bubba got pulled over and beautifully got two tickets. Failure to yield to another vehicle and a nice little fee for the modification of the truck. Small victories. One idiot at a time, Bob. One idiot at a time. Whew! Oh, I want to put the curly straw in the tequila bottle over that one. I really, really do. That's worth celebrating. And you know what that is? That's also activism. That's because who knows who that coal roller. Who's the next person on a bicycle that's going to go and belch some cancer-laden, ultra-fine, particulate-filled, polycyclic, aromatic, hydrocarbon-saturated smoke at? Maybe a life got saved today. Maybe that's something we kind of need to do a little more of. Either with the little notepad function on your phone, or an actual physical notepad and a pen. Write down a tag number when you see one of these coal-rolling jackanapes. Call the cops. Say, this guy is in violation of all kinds of laws with his modified diesel pickup truck. Protect and serve, baby. Oh, I'm proud. I'm just as proud as I can be to read that. I love that. Fail to yield to another vehicle in the... Nice little fee for the modification of the truck. Because, see, it is these rolling coal jerks. And, by the way, I should mention, I've seen my first one here, too. I haven't seen it from the back in order to get a tag number yet, but I've seen it. And I'll get to it. I will. And we all can. It's just a matter of paying attention, isn't it? Lovely note coming in via PayPal. Paul writes, "Your value goes far beyond what I can contribute today. Thank you." Thank you, Paul. Thank you. This is how we keep it going. We try to raise $150 a night. And that's a big help. Thank you to Asa, who is there so many evenings. Thank you. And thank you to Sal. Right off the bat, at the beginning of the program, Sal was there. So thank you to Paul and to Asa and to Sal. and to everyone of, who responded last night to solve our crisis. Oh, by the way, a little update coming in via regarding Roland Cole. If you are in Oregon, and there are many of you who are, in Oregon, there's a number you can call, and the nice officer will come and see the vehicle and do the smackdown. If it is modified, you get fined. Oh, goody. You see, I do. I take this stuff personally. It's either an upside or a downside, depending on which way you look at it. But when you do this kind of thing and you start paying attention to the science behind some of these practices, you learn sometimes more than you want to know. And I was toddling along in my little existence, utterly oblivious to the idea. I'd never even heard of an ultra-fine particle. But then I met Dr. Mike McCauley from the West Virginia University School of Public Health, and we had an occasion to go, we road trip together all over Wisconsin for a few days, trying to spread it's not the gospel of ultrafines, but it's more like the, oh my God, ultrafines! And I learned all kinds of stuff. Imagine if you can, and this kind of stuff really does challenge the scope of the human mind. I mean, we can go cross-eyed trying to look at the, just bing, pull a little hair out of your head and try to look at the size of it going across the hair. Wow, you can go cross-eyed. Well, imagine something that's a hundredth of that size, or a thousandth. An ultrafine particle is about the size of a virus. A virus, under the microscope, a virus. Somewhere between 100 microns down to 10 microns in size. And every ultrafine particle that has ever been tested has proven to be toxic. I mean, if it was, I don't know, a cotton candy ultrafine, it would be carcinogenic and toxic. But especially toxic are the ultrafines from things like sandstone, which is just silica, which under a microscope looks like a little tiny piece of jagged glass, which it is, and it just goes and raises hell inside your system. And I learned about those things, and I learned where they are and where they come from. And one of the places ultrafines come from is diesel emissions. And there aren't, and I hate to say this, but there aren't any good diesel emissions. The clean diesel that's been touted. I used to love diesel. I don't love diesel anymore. Because when you get rid of the black, smoky, sooty stuff, what you're left with is the ultrafines. Europe is miles, probably decades ahead of us on this, because they had thought that diesel was a source of a solution. It isn't. These ultrafine particles also come off of mountaintop removal sites. And hint, they happen anywhere there's blasting. So the fact that they are blasting the bejesus out of central and western Wisconsin to get at the frack sand, they're not fracking, they're getting after the sand because it's really good sand. And, they're blasting away near an elementary school. How about that? We know a little bit about that. They were blasting away near an elementary school here, too. Will in Chicago with a pertinent comment in the chat room. Clean diesel and clean coal? Are they two aisles down from the leprechauns and the unicorns? Pretty much. Pretty much. Let's see here. Let us continue. It is, after all, Titanic Tuesday, and Oh, glory. Might as well go ahead and give out the duct tape and tennis ball warning. This is not going to be nice. Oh, wait. Something else before we get to the Morans. We've talked a lot about the crisis, the immigrant child crisis in the United States. And I got a dispatch from Texas Betsy, who is deeply concerned about that crisis. And she wrote earlier today, a little more than an hour ago, hour and a half ago. This morning I gave testimony at the Travis County, Texas Commissioner's Court in support of treating the Central American refugees within Texas as humanely and kindly as possible. You wouldn't think that such testimony would be necessary in the blue dot liberal capital of Texas, but you'd be wrong. To be clear, this very liberal county is not as macho and xenophobic as our asinine governor. That's putting it mildly. But neither are we as welcoming and responsive as Dallas County. There is not yet a coordinated response to at the county or Austin municipal level, nor does it seem that there will be anytime soon. Instead, the county has agreed to support and publicize the church-led humanitarian mission to the detention center in McAllen. The county commission and Judge Bisco are happy to tell citizens where they may donate shoes, clothes, diapers, snack items, and baby wipes, but restricted our testimony to only include remarks related to the donations drive. Well, charming. So we can't actually talk about the actual humanitarian crisis. We can talk about how badly they need diapers and baby wipes. They listened to, the commissioner's court did, but did not officially hear the call for Travis County to open its heart, its homes, its legal representation systems, its health system, and its schools to some of the 50,000 recent immigrants and refugees in need of our assistance. The churches, synagogues, and mosques of Austin Interfaith have their blessing to help, but the county itself seems uninterested as of yet. Unlike some counties and cities, we are not screaming obscenities and blocking buses, but neither are we implementing the resources we used so effectively during hurricanes Katrina, Ike, and Rita. We will be going back next Tuesday with Skyped testimony from our members on the 5-day mission, and hopefully with a plan for official county involvement and assistance to the young people who need more than clean shirts and underwear. They need asylum. More next week. Signed, Betsy. Yeah, they do need more. You know what? Diapers, baby wipes, clean t-shirts, underwear, pair of pants. These things all cost money. What these children need, as much or more than anything else, costs nothing. Because what they need is simple, basic, human compassion. And if one were to pay attention only to the right wing in this country, one would find out that that is apparently in extremely short, finite supply. I am not drawing a comparison between the two. I am making a comparison with the people who are saying it. Have you noticed that the same people who are screaming about wanting to send the army or the military or the National Guard or the well-regulated militia or maybe just some freedom protectors, Wolverines! down to the border to stop them childrens and having hissies about soccer jerseys being Muslim prayer rugs. And, oh, dear God. Have you noticed that these are the same people who are okay with bombing the snot out of Gaza? Actually, bombing the life out of Gaza, but you get the idea. And they're just the same bunch. Note coming in from Michael. Travis County, Texas is also the home of Fort Hood, the largest military base in the world, full of welcoming military families that would be open to that would likely open their homes to these children. We do have a large immigrant population within our military, but not just them. Not just them at all. It's about 4 minutes before the hour. We have the Green News Report this evening. I always look forward to Tuesdays and Thursdays because we do have the Green News Report. I love the work that Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen do. Oh, and speaking of Thursday, now, I wasn't supposed to be on the air last night or tonight, but some circumstances intervened, and I have been. I was supposed to be at a family gathering. And that has been postponed, and it will now happen on Thursday and Friday. So I will I'll be gone Thursday and Friday, so no Green News Report. And hey, no Bob either Thursday and Friday. It's a chance for our family to get together with members of the family who are from who live far, far, far away. Here's the food porn portion of the program. There will be shrimp involved. But apart from that, we're all good for quite a while. So I just wanted, you know, I didn't want people, the crisis was not averted. No, the crisis has been averted. We'll just be in reruns or considering the way our craptastic ISP works. We may very well be in a situation where, I mean, if the stream goes out, the stream goes out, and I can't do anything about it if I'm not here. That's what I'm saying. And I'm looking for something right now before we go to the Green News Report in regard to the children, the immigrant children. Every now and then I find that someone has just captured the essence of an issue. And let me see if I can pull that up here. Yeah, here it is. Yeah, Kelly. Kelly sent this to us. She said, I saw this online. The next time a right-to-lifer says something about immigrants, say this to them. Don't think of the little immigrant children as undocumented immigrants. Think of them as post-fetal persons who were saved from 55,000 abortions, and show them the same love you give unwanted zygotes. Oh, I do love it. I don't know, Devin. Devin with a message saying, so shall we do prayer meeting on the porch? It's a possibility. I do have to warn you, however, we're going to have to march through a whole bunch of prayer meeting Wednesday stuff because it's already started piling up. Just saying. But that's a possibility. If Sparky's up for it, he can put out the bat signal. And that would work fine. Yes, indeed. Yeah, let's see. The clock on the wall that also has a thermometer on it indicates that here in the Horn Studio sauna, hi, Janie, otherwise known as the Horn Solar Furnace. We're kind of southwest facing here with a lot of glass. I sometimes feel like an ant under a magnifier. It is 92 degrees in here. Wow. You thought I was kidding about the sauna part. But it really, really is. Anyway. So we're going to take a break, and we can go to, well, we've got some Titanic intellect to examine here. We really, really do. And some of it will really curl your hair. Go ahead, just keep the hockey puck and the duct tape handy. It's not going to put you out any. But we'll go to the Green News. We'll go to the Green News Report, and then come back with more of Titanic Tuesday. This is listener supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Well, I think it's fine building jumbo planes, taking a ride on a cosmic train. Switch on summer from a slot machine. Just get what you want if you want, yes, you can get anything. I know we've come a long way, we're changing day to day. Tell me, where do the children play? Well, you roll on roads over fresh green grass for your lorry loads. And petrol gas, and you make them long, and you make them tough, but they just go on and on, and it seems that you can't get off. Oh, I know we've come a long way, we're changing day to day. But tell me, why do the children play?
It's Tuesday, July 22nd, 2014.
It really looked like, you know, the cauldron of hell.
Record wildfires burn a million acres in the Pacific Northwest. It's official. June 2014 was the hottest June on record. EPA moves to block massive pebble mine in Alaska. Plus,
hey, where's the meat?
Want to cut your emissions? Then cut out that hamburger.
Do I have to?
Do you care about the planet?
Oh, now you're playing the care about the planet card, eh? All of that and much more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Carbon dioxide is actually a benefit to the world, and so were the Jews.
Yeah. Wait, what? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, that guy, carbon dioxide is good, and so are the Jews. We also played a clip from him last week on CNBC saying...
You don't believe in climate change at all. You made a comment...
Just a minute. I believe in climate change.
No, sir.
Shut up!
So, who the hell is that guy, and what the hell is he talking about?
Yeah, that's William Happer. He's a professor with no discernible experience in climate science. He is paid by a free market think tank that denies climate change and is partly funded by, surprise, ExxonMobil and the Koch brothers.
And his connection, apparently he's compared carbon dioxide to the Holocaust or something?
Yes, he's basically said that carbon dioxide has been demonized the same way that Jews were demonized during the Holocaust in World War II or something like that.
So he was called a denier and he takes offense because people who deny the Holocaust are called deniers and... Oh, it's a whole lot of crazy. I'm glad they give him airtime over on CNBC. Anyway, what kind of real news do you have for us today, Des?
Well, first...
It really looked like, you know, the cauldron of hell. You know, you can see flames everywhere you looked.
A break in the weather is finally helping firefighters who are battling record wildfires across Washington, Oregon, and Western Canada. In Washington State, the Carlton Complex fire is now the largest wildfire in state history, burning an area four times larger than Seattle, destroying at least 200 homes.
With this kind of heat and wind, it looks like Eastern Washington is going to burn to the ground.
As of July, in Washington State, the total burn area from numerous fires is already more than the yearly average over the last decade, and fire season's only about a week old. Meanwhile, it's official. June 2014 was the hottest June ever recorded on the planet since record-keeping began in 1880.
Impossible. I have been told by global warming deniers that the planet has been cooling over the past 17 years.
Yeah, well, not according to the annual State of the Climate Report from NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. This hottest June on record follows the hottest May on record for the planet. That's 2 months in a row that the planet has broken all-time heat records.
For the record, I deny that.
Well, the report also confirms that the world's oceans are absorbing much of the heat trapped by greenhouse gas emissions, and that's raising ocean temperatures not just to a record high for the month of June. NOAA says that these were the hottest ocean temperatures ever recorded. Ever. This past spring, levels of heat-trapping carbon dioxide in the atmosphere passed 400 parts per million for the first time in human history and have now stayed above that level. In California, 2013 was the hottest and driest year for the state on record, and in the midst of that record drought, state regulators have ordered an emergency shutdown of 11 oil and gas wastewater injection wells because they could be polluting groundwater. In the past, the state allowed the oil industry to intentionally pollute some groundwater aquifers to dispose of toxic drilling waste because they didn't think those aquifers would ever be tapped. Now the state is in record unending drought. ProPublica says the state was so lax in oversight that the oil companies very likely have also polluted protected aquifers. Want to reduce your carbon footprint?
No.
Well, for those who do, you can do it by cutting out beef. According to a new study in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, beef production has the biggest environmental impact of all livestock production. Researchers studying the entire process from farm to supermarket found that eggs, pork, and poultry were all about equivalent in environmental impact, but beef generates 10 times the environmental impact and has the highest carbon emissions. Finally, score one for salmon. In Alaska, the EPA has proposed new restrictions for water pollution that would effectively block the development of the controversial proposed Pebble Mine.
The EPA has denied them their license to mine?
Well, sort of, but not outright. They put a cap on how many miles of streams and wetlands can be destroyed in the headwaters of Bristol Bay, the world's largest salmon fishery.
Yeah, sounds like the EPA is a denier to me. For much more on those stories and all the other ones we denied you, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes, and you can find and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Shut up.
What a great segment. 11 minutes past the hour on this Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. And let's see. We'll open the phones presently. The number, by the way, of course, 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. If you want to just reach out Skype to Skype, it's Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. Send me a contact request. We'll get all friended up and then you can reach the program at will. Now, I told you we had some Titanic intellects. You know how two of the biggest alleged thinkers, you know, the smart people in the Repig-Lickin Party, are Paul Ryan, who thinks that the best way to deal with Medicare is to get rid of it, and the best way to help Granny is to take away her food. Nice guy, that. But that's the House of Representatives. Over on the Senate side, the big thinker is Ted Cruz, son of Raphael and his reverb. Now, Crooks and Liars... Crooks and Liars grabbed a clip, and my family, well, my daughters and my lovely wife, love this show. Oh, they love them some True Blood. They like vampire stuff. Not my cup of tea, but yeah, whatever. So True Blood had an episode where a couple of the vampires infiltrate a Republican gathering in Texas, and they go in there masquerading as, well, Republicans. Here's the clip in question.
Any idea where else she might have gone?
Where she always goes, to Mommy and Daddy, even though she disgraced the family. They always fall for her BS.
And where do Mommy and Daddy live?
Why, Preston Hollow, of course. But they won't be home tonight. Probably already left for this. The second I told her that's where Mommy and Daddy were going, she hung up. She'll be there.
It's a newspaper clipping. Bush Library to host gala for Ted Cruz.
You have a picture of your parents I can borrow?
You'll never get in. You're vampires. Security's gonna be tight. And the only invited assholes.
You don't know us, sweetheart. We can be assholes. I told the saleswoman my wife and I were going to an exclusive high society event that only the very best would do. Voila.
Oh my God. I'm a Republican. You think that's funny, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Wait till you see what that nice man at Newman's and I picked up for you. Of all the horrible things I've seen in the last 100 years, this could be the most disturbing.
Yeah. Oh, come on. It's fun because we're together.
No, it isn't. What do Mommy and Daddy look like again? Ah. Someone's having a good time. You think Daddy'd be enjoying himself this much if Sarah got to him first?
I'll get him alone. You mingle. Find the mother.
How? Well, these bitches look the same.
Okay, so you get the idea. The vampires infiltrate a gathering of Republicans in Texas. And Ted Cruz is featured as the reason for the gathering. It's a gala. Well, I know. This is not easy. Well, no, this is not easy to say with a straight face. Ted Cruz, deep thinker, is mad at vampires. No, really. I guess they're like that, Republicans. They get mad at imaginary things. Remember? No. Remember when Jerry Falwell got mad at Tinky Winky? Because he said Tinky Winky was all gay and stuff and of indeterminate sexuality and carried a purse and had a triangle for a symbol and was purple, you know, the favorite color of all the homosexuals. They got a history of this. And then I forget, who was the wingnut who got mad at SpongeBob because he said he was pretty sure that SpongeBob and Patrick the Starfish were gay? Enter Ted Cruz. Of all the places I never thought to be mentioned, HBO's True Blood vampire show would have to be near the top of the list. Sunday night, they aired a misogynist and profanity-ridden episode where the Texas Republicans are murdered attending a Ted Cruz fundraiser. Well, I'm sorry to have lost the vampire vote. Ted, buddy, I mean, we know you believe in angels and demons and incubi and succubi and all that stuff, but shh, Ted, they're not real. And if you keep going on in public like this, somebody's going to shoot you in the neck with a Thorazine dart and make the voices stop talking to you. Get you the nice little dinner jacket with the really long sleeves that tie in that go around back, and we'll give you the purple crayon, and you can write on the nice soft walls with the purple crayon between your toes for the rest of your days. And America would be the better for it. Well, I'm sorry to have lost the vampire vote, but I'm astonished and amused that HBO is suggesting that hardcore leftists are blood-sucking fiends. See, he thinks. I bet he thinks. You want to bet he's got a zombie-proofed safe room? You want to bet? Nah, you won't take the bet, will you? Neither would I. It's probably as big as his whole house. I don't know if nobody ever told Ted this, but there's lots of profanity on HBO. Hint, not nearly as much as is to be heard in any of the given House and Senate office buildings, most often being uttered by the right-wing friends of Jesus, but a lot, and a lot more than HBO. Gosh, I remember when George W. Dim Leader said while he was ginning up the war against the people of Iraq that claimed a million innocent lives, I remember when George W. was heard saying, F Saddam, we're going to take him out. Only he didn't say F, he said the whole word. But Ted Cruz is a snarky little puke. And he said,
Then again, I guess I never had a chance with the vampire vote, since the dead tend to vote overwhelmingly for Dems. Right. We vote for the undead, Ted, not the brain dead. Oh, they are a merry bunch, aren't they? Yeah. And again, this guy is revered as a towering intellect of the right wing. He and Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head, are quite certain that they are, they each think that they're the smartest person in the universe, and, well, I'd like to see them battle to the death and close in a draw for the title. Then there's Stephen Steinlight. Sounds like a new way of packaging wheat beer. Steinlight! Stephen Steinlight is an analyst, emphasis on the first four letters of the word, with the Center for Immigration Studies, which bills itself as a think tank. Yeah, really. They're out of Sebring, Florida, and a think tank. Think tank.
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Well, Indigo, I think it is certainly fluid under the best of circumstances when you're talking about right-wingers. The Center for Immigration Studies isn't in Sebring, Florida. Stephen Steinlight was in Sebring, Florida, talking to a bunch of brainless, dead from the neck up, teabaggers. And, of course, he was going on about the giant honking nothing burger that is Obama's overreaching executive orders. This was the Highlands Tea Party. And he said frankly that John Boehner's lawsuit against the president, and he said, there's no court that will stop Obama from doing anything. And we all know, if there ever was a president that deserved to be impeached, it's this guy. All right? And I wouldn't stop. I would think being hung, drawn, and quartered is probably too good for him. But, you know, this man who wants to rule by the use of a pen, a telephone, let us not forget his teleprompter. The fact is that it would backfire very badly, and we've got to be grown-ups and accept that we can't have everything we want, you know, like his head on a skewer. Mm-hmm. A member of a right-wing think tank did some thinking and came up with suggesting the assassination and lynching of the President of the United States of America. Now, I have said in the past some unkind things about the likes of George W. Dimleader Bush and Dick Cheney. I have at no time ever, and nor have I ever heard anybody doing conversation or talk from this side of the political spectrum suggest that either of those two should be lynched. But then again, they're white folks, and we reserve lynching for a different demographic in this country. Now, don't we? Stephen Steinlight, you bloodthirsty teabag and freak. This moment of grammar is brought to you by Bob. And quite possibly Dr. Freud. What you were suggesting you wanted to be done to that one in your White House, you know, the Kenyan Muslim with the deep-seated hatred of white people and anti-colonialist tendencies. What you were suggesting in desire, in your, no, that wasn't desire, that wasn't yearning, that was longing. He's longing for a lynching. You said, I would think being hung, drawn, and quartered is probably too good for him. You know, the old westerns, hanging's too good for him. But he didn't say hanging. He said hung. The past tense of executing someone by putting a rope around their neck and suspending them off the ground, the past tense is not hung, it's hanged. Witness any number of television and movie dramas, and that you be hanged by the neck until dead. But therein lies the little Freudian moments, the little lace edging sticking out from their Freudian slips. Being hung. When you get right down to it, Steven Steinlein is afraid that Barack Obama is and probably knows he isn't. Hanged, dimwit! Hanged! Oh, damn, I've just provided him a defense if he's charged with a crime. No, I said I was feeling sexually inadequate when compared to that one in our White House. Jesus. It only gets better. Or worse, depending on your perspective. Note coming in from Steve in China. Just some thanks for playing the Cat Stevens. I love that song. May I humbly suggest that given the lyric content of that song I played at the top of the hour at the break, where do the children play? Cat Stevens. I think that should become the anthem of this current crisis. It certainly meets all the philosophical and content expectations. Who do you reckon we could get to? Hey, you know who would be awesome singing that? Willie. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't Willie Nelson be awesome putting out a cover of that in support of humane and compassionate treatment of little children who have been sent away by their families in hopes that the little children won't die even though the rest of the family will? So, glad you appreciated it, Steve. Steve says, I always liked Cat Stevens and felt that his music came from a deep and spiritual base. You probably already mentioned it before, but Cat went through several spiritual or religious phases over the years, Christian to Muslim to Christian again, so far as I know. Believer or not, it just goes to show that there are no easy answers to this rare gift of a very brief existence that we've all been given here. But if we can't provide for our descendants, surely it is we who have forsaken this amazing gift of time and space. Maybe that's a definition of hell on earth. Yeah. Was it Sartre who said hell is other people? I think he may have been right. Insofar as hell is separation from all goodness and all decency, all compassion, all love. Yeah. No word in this story at Think Progress as to whether or not Steven Steinlight and his sexual insecurities have been visited by the Secret Service. I will hazard a guess that he has not. And I will posit that guess based upon the fact that Cloven Bundy is still squatting out there in Nevada, having tried to foment revolution and treason against the United States government, and not a finger has been put to him. By the way, speaking of compassion for the little children coming from Central America, Steinlight also said that many of the children who are coming here are, in his words, gangbangers. Don't you love it when clueless, nerdy people try to use colloquial terms and you just know that they got no idea? That phrase, we can't have everything we want, you know, like his head on a skewer. So what he's saying, and it's kind of the reverse of the people who make that profound mistake time and time again of saying, well, I could care less. Well, that means you care. Good for you. Well, this is sort of like that, because what he's saying is, in saying we can't have everything we want, you know, like his head on a skewer, well, one, it's a pike or a spit, dumbass. A skewer. They're going to have to shrink his head first, aren't they? He was probably thinking about kebabs or something then, and that heathen Middle Eastern food. But what he's saying is, we can't have everything we want, like his head on a skewer. What he's saying is, he wants his head on a skewer. Maybe next to that loofah that Bill O'Reilly was going to use. Or no, the falafel. I'm sorry, the falafel. I'm getting my. It all runs together after a while. Yeah, I remember when Bill O'Reilly wanted to scrub a woman, get her drunk with wine, and send her to the shower and scrub her down with falafel. We'll do it live. But by the way, this guy isn't just some crank, Steven Steinlight. He's not just some jackass out there talking to the teabaggers. Even though the Highland Party teabaggers, they just clapped and clapped and they laughed and laughed when he talked about what he wanted to do to Barack Obama. No, this guy has actually been paid money. And he's been an expert witness, no kidding, for the Judiciary Committee of the United States Senate. For instance, Senator Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Hood of Alabamistan and his mighty ears thinks this guy is an intellect. Hence, he's nominated on Titanic Tuesday. House Judiciary Committee Chairman Bob Goodlatte of Virginia also thinks this guy is a Titanic thinker. Woof. Yeah, no kidding. Anthony with a message coming in via Facebook, you know, Bob Kincaid on Facebook. Anthony says, Steve in China just stole my thunder, Bob. I want to thank you for playing my favorite Cat Stevens song, too. I was on my way home from work, and it turned my normally mundane commute home to Delray Beach much more enjoyable than usual. No. See, you don't, Anthony, you don't get to use mundane commute to Delray Beach in a sentence. At least not when you're sending it to me here in the sacrifice zone. But, no, I'm kidding. Thank you, Anthony. Thank you sincerely. Now, speaking of those little ones, here's some more Titanic intellect. Remember the Minutemen? The Minutemen Militia Project? They're organizing. One could say that they're on the march, metaphorically speaking. As of May the 1st, 2015, according to Jim Gilchrist, as it's been reported by the Southern Poverty Law Center, Jim Gilchrist says that they're going to recruit 3,500 non-member volunteers. And on May the 1st, 2015, they're going to the U.S.-Mexican border. In other words, he's planning an act of civil war. The Southern Poverty Law Center is well familiar with Jim Gilchrist. They're calling this effort of May 1st, 2015, Operation Normandy. Let's check in with Jim Gilchrist, shall we?
To the crime at hand of these criminal aliens will attest to. The price of an action...
Man Project is...
Hold on. We're having audio issues. Okay, goodbye, Steven Steinlight. Here we go. Let's try this again. Operation Normandy. The clip is from CBS5AZ.com. Nope, still got the stupid audio there. Where's it coming from? Come on. Oh, there they are. Go away. Thank you. This is the curse of being a one-man show. We'll get there in a second. And remember, Operation Normandy. Remember, D. Tracy, galoshes. All right, tell us about it, Jim. You freak.
Man Project is looking for thousands of volunteers to secure our southern border. CBS 5's Adam Longo telling it like it is. Adam.
Wait a minute, Adam. Now, this is from an allegedly professional broadcast operation called KPHO. CBS 5, somewhere in Arizona stand. And the newsreader at the desk says, to secure our southern border. Bull! The Minutemen can't secure their own shoelaces. But I guess you have to write scripts like that if you're going to be a professional broadcaster in Arizona, Stan. Okay, back to you, Adam Longo.
Catherine, good evening. The founder of this group even has a name for this campaign. It's called Operation Normandy. Not an invasion of any country, but rather he says...
Wait, how do we... No. If it's Operation Normandy, Normandy was an invasion. But thanks for providing cover, Adam Longo. Thanks so much.
protection of ours. Critics, though, say if you put a bunch of untrained and unarmed volunteers along the border, it...
Not to mention Morans.
Wolverines!
...could create more problems than it actually solves.
Our federal government especially has failed us.
Jim Gilchrist co-founded the Minuteman Project, a campaign that brought civilian volunteers to Arizona's borders and others from 2005 through 2010.
Civilian volunteers, right. Heavily armed paramilitary domestic terrorists. But I guess you can't say that over at CBS 5 KPHO.
We can't do that anymore because we're capturing... heavily armed drug mules carrying AK-47s and MAC-10s.
The project made a lot of people nervous and a lot of other people proud. Well, this week he's announcing plans to bring it back. Gilchrist spoke to me via Skype from California.
We're trying to recruit thousands of people to cover the poorest border areas from San Diego, California, to Brownsville, Texas.
Some who participated in the last border campaign were labeled as vigilantes. Gilchrist says he wants to stop...
Others were labeled as idiots.
...the spread of people coming across the border, but he says he wants to do it legally.
And the rule of law means you do not put a hand on anyone, you do not talk to anyone, you do not confront anyone, you report to Border Patrol.
He's hoping for 3,500 for this campaign that he's...
Are they going to bring guns? Are they going to point guns at, say, 8-year-old little boys and little girls? Are they going to do that? You know, for freedom?
Planning for next May. Militia members are invited so long as they follow the law.
They're not these man-eating ogres that they're made out to be.
Gilchrist says no one who participates will operate under the umbrella of the Minuteman Project. He says they'll...
That's called risk management. Oh, no, we had nothing to do with it. Oh, you're suing? You're suing? Are you suing? No, we weren't there. We didn't do it. And even if we had do it, we were only following orders, okay?
Just be individual citizens exercising their constitutional rights.
And Gilchrist says he wouldn't be surprised if he actually got more like 35,000 volunteers to be able to join him in this campaign that, again, he's targeting May of next year.
Yeah, neither would I, Adam Longo. Neither would I. Because the hate... is that thick in this once great nation. He might get 35,000 people who can't tie their own shoelaces down on the Arizona-Mexico border. For pity's sake. This'll work out nicely, won't it? No. James, with a thought on Operation Normandy, insofar as the invasion is being brought, this is an invasion of little children gangbangers, right? Well, then the Minutemen who are sitting there waiting for them, if we're going to work with the Normandy metaphor, wouldn't that make Jim Gilchrist and his 35,000 Patriot buddies, well, wouldn't that make them the Wehrmacht? All dug in on the beaches and whatnot? Only in this case, they'll have lawn chairs and umbrellas and parasols and fainting in the heat and all of that kind of stuff. Wouldn't that... Right. Yeah. Yeah, see, Marty, going back to my remarks about... I never said anything about wanting to see Dick Cheney or Rumsfeld or any of those other freaks done physical violence. And Marty agrees. He goes, no, the most I ever wanted for Dim Leader and the evil one was to see them frog march to The Hague for a Nuremberg-style war crimes trial, which if they were part of another country, they would have had. By the way, the evening in the chat room's developed nicely. Good evening, Tim from L.A. Good evening, Texas T. Paul. Good evening, Mr. Gibson. Howdy, M. Brandt. Good evening, John, Horst, Devin, CQ. Good evening, Bean. Howdy, Anatole. And if you want to jump in, it's free and it's easy. Just run on by headonradionetwork.com, and you too can be part of the full multimedia conversational experience that is the headonradionetwork.com chat room. By the way, thanks. Thank you very much, Robert. Robert got us started yesterday evening with his 21st of the month Up Over Down Under Australia Challenge, and that's where everything that led to the aversion of this crisis began. Thank you. Thank you, Robert. Okay. So, yuck. And then there's... Then there's Texas. And you probably all know this, but, well, why not? So, May 2015 is going to see 3,500, maybe 35,000 weirdos on the border. But that's May 2015. This here is right now in Texas.
And little children from Central America are detained in squalor. We are too good a country for that to occur. That is why today I am using my executive authority as governor of Texas and activating the National Guard. I've directed Adjutant General John Nichols to immediately prepare for deployment up to 1,000 of his troops in support of the Department of Public Safety's ongoing surge operation. It is codenamed Operation Strong Safety all along the border region.
How about that? Operation Strong Safety. SS! Now, that just has to be the goddess of irony. That just poking her finger and... Rick Goodhair Perry's eye. Operation SS. Didn't think that one out very well, did you? No, I didn't think so. Kind of reminds me of when the original Iraqi... operation name was Operation Iraqi Liberation, till the Bush administration figured out that spelled oil. The goddess of irony just hovers over the shoulders of these idiots. Tell us more. Tell us more, Rick Perry.
Prior to Operation Strong Safety, Texas has already invested a half of...
Why not Operation Mike Linebacker? No, never mind. It's too early to start talking football.
$1 billion in border security. That is a burden that Texas taxpayers should not have to burden themselves with.
Well, A for effort on the word choice there, Rick. That's a burden Texas taxpayers shouldn't have to burden themselves with. He had that line written up for him by the Texas Department of Redundancy Department.
But as all of the Texans who have fallen victim to the crime at hand of these criminal aliens will attest to.
Language time. Criminal aliens. In fact, this was discussed by Dr. Bill in his... discussion, Department of Redundancy Department's working for me too. Dr. Bill discussed this in his examination of unalienable rights in the Declaration of Independence. Alia, for instance, et alia, the Latin reference, means and others. Alien comes from the same root. These criminal aliens. And we're not talking about the blood-sucking monkeys from outer space and planet Norblap 12. No. We're talking about 8-year-olds. Mm-hmm. Criminal aliens. So when you hear somebody say aliens, understand they're saying others. In other words, not like us. They don't partake of the us-ness that makes us good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian Merkins. If God Almighty had wanted them children to be Merkins, he would have had them born to Americans, but he didn't like them so good, so he made them Guatemalans and Hondurans and El Salvadorans, others, criminal aliens, referring to children as alien, criminal aliens.
The price of inaction is too high for Texans to pay. The National Guard's troops that I am deploying will support the state-led border surge by acting as a force multiplier on the ground and providing additional air assets beyond their current efforts.
You know what I like? When they put those little dried cranberries and the walnuts on the word salad. I like that.
These additional resources will help combat the brutal Mexican drug cartels that are preying upon our communities, and also will help deter others before they have a chance to harm our citizens and become criminal aliens within our borders.
Others, criminal aliens.
It's not only our right as Texans, but it's our responsibility to act independent of the federal government if the federal government fails to do the job that they're required to do.
And how has the federal government failed to do the job that they're required to do? More people have been apprehended, incarcerated, and repatriated, you know, kicked out of the country by the Obama administration than George W. Dim leader ever dreamed of doing. Oh, and there's this. Just a little something. The sheriffs of the counties along Texas's border with Mexico think that this idea of Rick Perry's is about as dumb in the head as a hog is in the ass. Yeah. According to the Dallas Morning News, Cameron County Sheriff Omar Lucio said, "At this time, a lot of people do things for political reasons. I don't know that it helps. I don't know what good they can do," talking about the National Guard. "You can't just come out here and be a police officer," which is true. The National Guard is not empowered with police powers, not even in Texas. I guess Rick Perry and his fabulous hair and don't these glasses make me not look nearly so stupid glasses. He could call out the Texas Rangers. Or the Houston Astros. No. I'm talking about the law enforcement people. He could call them out, and they'd have arrest powers, right? The sheriffs certainly have arrest powers. But the National Guard have none. They can't even point, I hope, can't even point a weapon at these children. On the other hand, calling out the National Guard and mobilizing it is going to cost how much to the taxpayers of the state of Texas for doing something that is nothing more than, as Sheriff Lucio noted, a politically motivated act? Meanwhile, poor old Texas National Guard Adjutant General John Nichols, well, what the Texas National Guard is going to be doing is referring and deterring. No word yet on how that's going to work out. So, man, if I was a Texan, I would be crossing off days on the calendar like it was some sort of advent calendar till the day that Rick Perry's no longer in office. Of course, being Texas and everything. Sorry, Dr. Allen. Sorry, Betsy. Sorry, Beth. Sorry, Diane. Sorry, everybody in Texas who's part of the Horn Family Commune. Dadgummit. Sorry, Janie. And thank you, Janie. Thank you very much, by the way, for helping out last night. The problem is that there's every chance in the world, not that I like to admit it, there's every chance in the world that a guy who is even dumber than Rick Perry will wind up being the next governor of the state of Texas. Mm-hmm. The guy whose supporters put out a graphic of a Wendy Davis abortion Barbie that comes with a pair of scissors for stabbing the little baby in the back of the neck when it emerges from the birth canal. Stay classy, Texas GOP. Mercy. So let's take a break and open the phone lines if you wish. It's up to you. I can filibuster for another hour, or, you know, we can talk. Area code 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. Conversation radio is what we do best here. This is The Horn.
Radio.
I'm game for most any kind of barbecue you want to offer up, but I'm going to draw the line at barbecue iguana. Just saying. This is the Horn, Titanic Tuesday, the 22nd day of July, 2014. Note coming in from Robert D'Australia. Monsters. Did you ever see the film Monsters? I do believe I did, Robert. The two protagonists, after a journey through Mexico, reach the U.S.-Mexican border. There they encounter a concrete wall the size of a mountain range designed to keep the monsters out. Is that what these people want? Yes. Hint, says Robert. It didn't work in the film. P.S. See also Pacific Rim. I need to see that. I haven't seen. I've read good things about that. But also then there was also the there was the atrocious World War Z. Man, I hated that movie. Especially the part where they wound up in Israel, where the Israeli wall turns out to be, well, it was built to keep the zombies out, and of course the zombies are a metaphor for the Palestinians, and well, you understand, right? Note coming in from Tim from L.A. Bob, aren't the Minutemen Bush supporters? By arresting these refugees and turning them over to the ICE Department, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Isn't it making the process of allowing these refugees to live in the U.S. a lot quicker, much to the disdain of these teabaggers? It'd be a lot easier to let these refugees run through the desert and die than to turn them over, because when Bush signed the William Wilberforce Trafficking Victims Protection Reauthorization Act of 2008, and these people claim refugee status, there's no way the U.S. can return them back to their country of origin because they can die. Well, what the Trafficking Act, though, does is doesn't it just give them a hearing? Isn't that what the people up in Vassar, Michigan, are having a hissy about, that 15 or 20 immigrant kids will be held at a facility there until they can be given an immigration trial and sent back? Not sure. Let's go to the phones. 304-574-8178 if you want to get in line. There's only one line, but if you want to get in line, you're welcome to. Dial in, and when you get an answer, you get an answer. By the way, happy birthday wishes going out to our stalwart supporter, Sal, and happy birthday wishes also going out a day or so late to our dear friend, Tracy, the lady cab driver in L.A. Hey, welcome to the program.
You talking to me?
Talking to you. What's happening, Bill?
Well, yeah, well, I'm going to try to keep this as brief as possible because of the phone situation. Well, I'm proud of myself. First of all, I was sitting here trying to think of the name of a guy who wrote a lot of science fiction. He wrote a lot of stuff about the gang activities in the U.S. in the 50s. He was a guy from Painesville named Harlan Ellison. The name finally came back to me after sitting here long enough. Because, Bob, all this youth stuff in this country, these youth gangs, again, you know me, Bob, reach back into the books of history of the social structure of the country we live in. Do you know how big those gangs were in the northern big cities, and these kids were Caucasian as hell.
Oh, sure, and, huge. Almost as soon as cities rose up in North America, gangs came with them.
Yep. Well, if you want to go back, go back to New York City in the days of the New York draft riots, for God's sake.
Well, and that's roughly the same time period covered by Martin Scorsese in The Gangs of New York.
Sometimes somebody tells a story because today, of course, well, we know they all speak with a foreign accent, or they're all dark skinned, and they're right. It's been around a long time, and what can we do? Then there was a movie I was thinking of, and our movie buddy, what's his name, your neighbor over there. It was about. It featured somebody playing a comedic role of a Latino, maybe a Mexican, service cop of some kind. Where he leaves this thing up to the, it's centered around retaking the Alamo was the backstory. And the whole thing, and I'm trying to, I think Jonathan Winters might have been in it. I'm trying to remember who the leads were.
Somebody in the chat room or via email or Facebook or something will come up with it. It's not ringing a bell for me.
Yeah, well, it was before your time. I mean, it was almost before mine, you know. I mean, these are things I saw when I was a... Back in the days when we had a thing called neighborhood theaters, which were second-run houses. All the big places got the stuff the first time around, then it went out to the neighborhoods, and the neighborhood houses also had a big deal every Wednesday night. It was called Bank Night, where you play some kind of variation of bingo, and, man, you could win a whole set of dishes, honest to God. I mean,
really?
Oh, yeah. Jesus, I feel like I was living on Mars with some of this stuff. But I never realized that these situations would just get bigger and bigger. Where are these kids coming from, Bob?
Guatemala.
Where are they acting like?
Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador.
And how are they getting here?
By any means necessary.
Yep.
Their parents often take what little money they have and pay a person who is referred to as a coyote.
Yep.
To
I'm familiar with that.
bring them to the border, or and quite often the coyote will just abandon them.
Yeah. Well, they'll leave them there to die. They'll leave them there to die of thirst or hunger or whatever if push comes to shove.
Yeah.
Once they've got their money, I mean, this is just because they're not wearing a white shirt and tie doesn't mean they're not real capitalist oriented, you know. Profit oriented, but it's all relative. These people live by killing poor people. How different are they from the people who were running the factory in Bhopal? It's a scale thing. You put the money on a scale. Here's a guy beating you for $1,000 or $1,500, and here's a guy who's beating the whole nation and all the people in the area. Well, I'm talking to a West Virginian. I think you'd know about that stuff.
A little bit.
The coal industry. When did it spring up, Bob?
When
did it get...
The very first coal miners in Appalachia were slaves. But in the aftermath of the Civil War, when the railroads were rehabilitated and expanded, remember a lot of the treason committers from the Confederate Army. I mean, for instance, didn't James Longstreet become a railroad executive?
I think he might have, yes.
But anyway, the railroads expanded quickly in the aftermath of the Civil War because so much had been destroyed during the war, and that was the era of the beginning of what was known as the Broad Form Deed, in which not sophisticated Appalachian landowners were dispossessed of their mineral rights and rights of way and things like that, and that began the process. By 1900, it was going full force, at least in areas where there was a railhead that the coal could be gotten to. Well, often the rail lines were run straight to the mines. And beginning in the late 1890s, early 1900s, it really, really gets going. And then it just explodes. Probably the wrong word. Up through the teens and 20s and 30s. And in especially from 1900 to 1930, conditions were utterly brutal.
Well, you know, the railroad...
It's 1907 when Monongah explodes and killed somewhere around 500 new immigrants to the country.
Yep.
And widowed and orphaned God knows how many. Among the dead in the Monongah explosion are, of course, little boys, children, who had been driven by poverty into working in the mines. Widows were... It happened in December of 1907, and when the company finally ponied up something in the way of compensation for the women who had lost their husbands and their source of support, because, you know, they stayed at home and the men went to work in hell. A coal company executive, upon announcing that some widows and orphans would get $75 apiece, then remarked, "That ought to make a pretty good Christmas for them."
Oh, yeah, really. This is the attitude. The whole attitude is what gets you after a while.
And next year will be the 100th anniversary of the Leyland disaster that happened just maybe 10 miles from here, when more than 100 people were killed in a mine. And, it happened all over Appalachia. Because it was more...
And there was no other way to deal with the mines, because they didn't have the... I mean, today, theoretically, you should have equipment that could read the air in there a hell of a lot better than they could back in the 1870s or 80s.
Well, sure, but all of the, whether it's 1890 or 1900 or 2014, the bottom line is, how much risk can we expose these workers to in order to maximize our profits?
Yes.
I mean, if you're an accountant with a coal company, especially if you're in risk management, at some point in time, you're going to sit down and figure in the cost of what happens if you lose an entire crew in a mine explosion, and whether or not you will still be making the holy profit.
Yeah. That's the whole thing, the bottom line is the bottom line. That's all that concerns these people. And that's where the whole evil comes in, because there's no thought put to anything but the profit. Grenville Dodge, that name sound familiar?
Yep.
Dodge City, and he was a Union general in the Civil War. He was one of the Western armies, and he was one of Grant's buddies, because that's how that seemed to take off big time with and was the Transcontinental Railroad, was it a good thing to have? I suppose you'd say it was, to the point of, transportation. I know Harry Truman had a lot of problems.
Depends on who you ask about the Transcontinental Railroad. I can imagine there are some native plains people who might not think it was such a great idea. This is the nature of American excess. It's not just that we built the Transcontinental Railroad. It's that expeditions were then led in which people, for sport, would lean out the windows and extinctify the American bison.
Yeah. They shoot anything whether it was on two legs or four. You're right. Because what was it? Sheridan said the only good Indians are dead Indians.
That's Philip Sheridan.
His reputation during the war was not exactly the best either. He was a cold-blooded son of a,
And as I've said repeatedly, the Sand Creek Massacre, with the opening of the assault on Gaza, the Sand Creek Massacre has been much on my mind. You remember Colonel Chivington?
Well, now you push me into another area, which is this, my first wife being Jewish, I was exposed quite heavily to the founding of Israel, and I still think highly of people like Golda Meir. I look at her and say, okay, within reason. But then I remember the six-day event in the USS, what was the ship?
Liberty.
Liberty, yeah. And I remember listening to the radio and... But then again, you look at the other side. Was Nasser a good guy? That damn behavior, it just seems to go from bad to worse with human beings, and it's scary. How the hell do you convince people that this is not the way to deal with one another? Because one guy does this, and the other guy says, "Well, I'll show you." I just got a really good book written by Max Hastings, A Study of the First World War, and the first six CDs just leads you up from there hasn't been a shot fired yet. They finally decided they're picking sides, and it just is amazing to watch this stuff go down, how they pick sides, and You know, the three empires, for instance. The Kaiser, the Tsar, and the Emperor of the Austro-Hungarian Empire was just falling apart. It was literally hardly existed in reality. Because these people just, if you look at a map of Europe in those days, you'd say, what the hell is this? This guy owned that. Yeah, well, what did we learn twice? The Austrians, Germans, and Russians took Central Europe and broke it up into their own, you know, control areas. Gosh. I don't know. Sometimes I think I'm getting out of here on time, you know. That's what I have to say. But thanks to the own members, I'm not getting out of here that quick. But it's just, you know, that's the thing about the study of history, and you and I have that in common, that this is like a damn wheel that turns, Bob. And the faces change, the motivation for more and more wealth doesn't seem to change. And I can understand the motivation for trying to get enough food in your stomach so you don't starve to death.
Yeah.
Is that a basic function of
well, that's part of the whole hierarchy of needs, you know, Maslow and food, shelter, water.
Yeah.
I've read stuff now. I've been reading a lot of a good bit of stuff on the plane that went down, the Malaysian Airlines plane that was shot down over eastern Ukraine.
Yeah.
And that thing, without having to channel my inner Alex Jones, that thing's beginning to stink.
Well, I'm beginning to wonder about this particular airline has just lost two planes. Two of the biggest disasters in the last how many years are due to that
not years.
Company out of...
No, not years, months.
Months, yes. Yeah.
But in this particular case, there are, well, they say that truth is the first casualty of war, and apparently it's also the first casualty of civil unrest, as it's being described in Ukraine.
To me, if I was running a business, I'm find a new way to fly that plane around that stuff, you know?
Yeah. I'm not going to sit here and declaim any paeons to Vladimir Putin.
No.
He is not deserving of them. But there's more than enough information out there to suggest that the United States, which has a long and dishonorable history of getting foreign policy completely freaking wrong, may be backing a bunch of fascists in Ukraine.
Well, there's a certain suspicion there. They are
certainly there. I mean, there's no doubt that there's a fascist element there. And so, our foreign policy, the United States foreign policy bill, is the giant whopping screw up that it is, because we back whoever business interests in the United States say needs backing. Hence, United Fruit in Central America, and Haiti, and what we did in Chile.
Yes, sir. All about the money.
None of those decisions were ever predicated upon the needs and well-being of the people in those countries. They were predicated upon the needs, and not even the needs, but the desires of corporations for profits.
Yeah.
Was it Arbenz in Guatemala?
Yeah.
And in Chile, and then there's the nasty little nightmare that Ronald Reagan damn near personally created in El Salvador, and we just can't stop screwing up, Bill, and I don't understand why.
Well, that's one of the things I pointed at with some pride was Alan Dulles and his brother, John Foster, one of us, of a massive air raid over Dien Bien Phu in 1954. And they were talking nuclear weapons for a while in that raid, Operation Vulture. And Ike went to, what was his name, the guy, Matt Ridgway. And Ridgway studied it, and it came back to Ike and said, there's nothing in this for us. What are we doing this for? You know, and maybe it was a selfish motive, but at least it was a correct motive. Because they wanted, you know, those boys wanted us to, wanted to involve us heavily in Vietnam and Indochina in 1954, for God's sake. We had just finished one mess in Korea. And the, it just, in fact, that's something. I remember one of the things I bought in Toronto at, by the lake at an antique store was a service medal for somebody who fought in the French War. It was written in French. And I picked it up. This is just a, what a funny thing to own. Where the hell do you find that, you know?
Right.
Because it was kind of usual. But, yeah, I remember, because I can remember watching TV film clips of the, you know, of the Dien Bien Phu thing. And that was 1954, and we didn't jump into it full tilt, but how soon were we into it? Up to our asses, and our young men are dying over there in huge numbers, huh?
Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, the general who beat the French and us just died recently. He was over 100.
And he
wasn't real happy with the way that country was going.
Consider the birth of the Irish Republic.
Yes.
You had Michael Collins, who was out there doing the dirty work of bringing it to life, and then for all intents and purposes, didn't Eamon de Valera have him killed? Wasn't he in the way after that?
Yeah.
Yep. By the way, the Horn Research Department, in this case, the research desk being manned by Marty, I want you to know that it was, the movie you were talking about is 1969's Viva Max.
Yeah.
Featuring Peter Ustinov, Jonathan Winters, John Astin, among others. Hey, Bill, I got a roll, but it's awful good to talk to you.
I one more thing. The religion in Central Michigan, the Dutch Reformed, I'll just say that and let it go at that and let everybody else figure it out from there, you know?
All right. Okay.
Take care.
All right. You have a good evening, Bill. Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, legendary bluesman, calling from Cleveland. And, of course, the lines are open if you want to get involved in the conversation, too. Area code 304-574-8178. This is Conversation Radio, Bill talking about the origins of Vietnam. There's a brilliant album out there. Everybody here by now knows I'm an Al Stewart fan, have been since I was a kid. Back in 1995, he released an album with Lawrence Juber, J-U-B-E-R, am I mispronouncing, on guitar. The musicianship, the production value, everything on this album is wonderful. And it's historically relevant. And Bill's reference to colonial Vietnam reminded me of this one track. Like I said, I love music with meaning. I thought we'd take a little break in case anybody wants to jump into the conversation or not. I mean, because I got a filibobster. I got about six filibobsters that are still waiting. It's called Sampan. Oh, listen to those guitars. It's a 12-string, isn't it?
The sun is high. Looking out, I see the emptiness beyond the jetty. Seagulls raining like confetti on the water. Sea and sky come together in a hazy kiss out on the ocean. Europe seems a foreign notion, hardly thought of. And would you leave your modern world behind? I know who I am, riding on my sampan. I know who I am, riding on my sampan.
and then a floppy hat and lemon suit. Beneath his ancient leather boots, the ground is straining. Far away, figures bend to tap the endless seas of leather trees, to clip the wheels of pirates' taxis where it's raining. And would you leave your melting world behind? I know who I am, riding on my sunbeam. I know who I am, riding on my sunbeam.
Reference to the rubber plantations to coat the tires of Paris taxis where it's raining. Yeah. Like I said, I love smart music. And it loves me some history. 1995's Between the Wars, Al Stewart. If you love good musicianship and you love historic, you know, really good, relevant historic, yeah, it's an album. That's an album to own. It just is. Almost to the bottom of the hour in this third hour of the program, this Titanic Tuesday. As I was preparing to bring Dr. Bill on air this afternoon for his program, remember, he's live on Mondays and Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, on Tuesdays at 1:30, and, of course, in the 3 o'clock hour, Rick Smith follows. And there is simply no better progressive radio than Rick Smith. There's not, especially in that time slot. But I was getting ready to bring Dr. Bill on the air when the news broke that there was a ruling today by the D.C. Circuit. And, of course, you know that the D.C. Circuit is a nest of just right-wing vipers who have no interest in jurisprudence whatsoever. And every interest in ideology. So a number of circuits have heard this claim. It's one thing after another as the right wing tries to defeat what they call Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. A number of suits have been filed. A couple of circuits have just thrown them out entirely, saying, this is nuts, get out of here. Well, today we had rulings from the D.C. Circuit and from the Fourth Circuit, which is headquartered in Richmond, Virginia, which encompasses West Virginia. In one of the cases, the teabaggers went out and dragged a dollar bill through a parking lot and found a willing plaintiff from Ellenboro, West Virginia, some guy who said, well, if I has to buy insurance, even if they subsidies, I'm going to go out of business. Buddy, if your margins are that close, if you had called, you'd probably be on the expanded Medicaid. Let's put it that way. Really. But the upshot is the Fourth Circuit said, nah, you teabagging freaks lose. This is crazy. Of course the IRS has the right to promulgate regulations that will govern subsidies for people who purchased insurance through the federal marketplace. You see, this is how the whole thing, I mean, God, I just now thought of Tom's mother and her degree in Byzantine history. Because I was about to say that the labyrinth of lawsuits behind lawsuits behind lawsuits behind lawsuits behind lawsuits that the right wing have set up, the teabaggers and Americans for prosperity, but not healthcare, mind you. The labyrinth that they have set up is Byzantine in its most convoluted sense. Byzantine, of course, meaning things that are made unnecessarily complicated. A Rube Goldberg device is another way of expressing it. So as soon as the Roberts Court, you know, the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, and that Kennedy guy, as soon as they said that, well, as soon as the ruling came down saying that the Affordable Care Act mandate was legal, well, that was just the first skirmish. And, of course, the right-wingers won a big one in that one because, although not too many people have paid attention to it, the single biggest thing coming out of the Affordable Care Act decision in July or June of 2012 was the fact that it struck down the nationwide mandate for the expansion of Medicaid, which, of course, was the most surefire way to universal single payer. But that was, like I said, that was just a skirmish. The right wing is in this for the long haul. So their latest claim is that it is impermissible for the federal government via the IRS to provide tax credits for people who purchase insurance through the federal exchange. Meanwhile, of course, as a graphic that Tim from L.A. sent me a little bit ago under the subject line of Move Out of West Virginia shows, the vast majority of states refused to set up their own exchanges. For instance, the state of West Virginia took beaucoup de millions of dollars to set up a state exchange and then said, huh, well, we done spent all the money on studying whether or not we could make us a one of them by our exchanges, and we done found it out we can't do it. It's just too dang hard. It's going to cost too much. Thanks for the money. I personally think the money is still laying around somewhere, and the way they figured out they didn't want to do an exchange was for Governor Earl Ray Tomlin to pick up the phone and call the head of the West Virginia Coal Association and say, hey, boss, you reckon it'd be all right if we had us one of them state insurance exchanges? And the head of the West Virginia Coal Association said, have you lost what is left of your tiny little mind, Earl Ray? Of course we don't want no state exchange. We got a whole system lined up that's all predicated. That's a big word, Earl Ray, I know. But it's all predicated on you signing on and other states are signing on to the federal exchange, the marketplace. So West Virginia signed on to the federal marketplace, and so did Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia. They had to. You can either have your own or you got pushed into the federal marketplace, which, of course, is nothing but fascist socialism, communism, right? So along comes this knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing goober from Ellenboro, West Virginia. Says, yeah, but if I ask to buy me some insurance through the exchange, even if it's subsidized corporate welfare, well, I'm going to go out of business in my rug-selling shop. And as I said, the Fourth Circuit said, shut the up. This is a permissible exercise of the IRS's discretion in the executive branch. Go away, you lose, sit down, darken our door no further. However, in that den of vipers. In that snake pit that is the D.C. Circuit, they came to an entirely different conclusion. Oh, yeah. That was earlier today. And the D.C. Circuit sided with the teabaggers in a 2-to-1 ruling of a portion of the D.C. Circuit. I have little doubt that the Obama administration will probably request a hearing. It's called en banc. That means all the circuit court judges in the circuit have to sit and judge the case, not just three. And the 2-to-1 ruling, in the 2-to-1 ruling, the D.C. Circuit said, the law does not authorize the Internal Revenue Service to provide tax credits or insurance purchased on federal exchanges. The law plainly makes subsidies available only on exchanges established by states. So what's important here is that we now have what is called a conflict in the circuits. That means one circuit court has ruled one way on an issue, and on the same identical issue, another circuit has ruled the other way. What this means is that almost lead pipe cinch guarantees that the case will go before the Supreme Court of the United States and the rats plus that Kennedy guy who rule it with a jackbooted iron fist. Yeah, I know. It's a really dumb metaphor. Who wears boots on their fists? But we're talking about right-wing fascists, aren't we? Yeah. Anybody want to guess how this is going to go when Robert Alito, Thomas Scalia, and that Kennedy guy get hold of it? Oh yeah, we said it was an appropriate use of the taxing power. We said Congress could do that with the mandate and everything, but we didn't say the IRS could do this. I mean, we only said it was a valid exercise of the taxing power because 2012 was a presidential election year, and we were trying to paint Barack Hussein Obama, that one in our White House, as a tax-and-spend liberal Democrat. Because I, John Roberts, am the most evil Republican genius in America, and he is. I would not bet a nickel on the survivability of this portion of the Affordable Care Act. Which brings me then to this question. Is there any doubt now, is there any doubt at all, that there exists in this country a cadre, a guerrilla group, if you will, who are actively inimical to the continued survival of millions of Americans? And I'm talking, of course, about the Koch brothers, Americans for Prosperity, the teabaggers, the whole igum-foo bunch. You know, I got mine, F you. Because there is no doubt to me. They had to file these lawsuits. Not because they felt morally compelled, but because as time goes by, people are really, really quite pleased with the way it's working out. Now, me, I still think it is intrinsically evil to allow any corporation to engage itself in profit-making on the backs of people suffering from illness, physical misery, and death. Now, I don't have to have a religion to tell me that that's wrong. I just know it is. I know that there are some things in this life that are not suited to the corporate profit model. Water companies asleep at the switch in Charleston, West Virginia, as toxic poison goes through their water system day after day after day, should not be in the profiting business. They should be in the water business with everyone fully and fairly compensated. But the first thought should not be, hey, how are we going to provide a profit to our shareholders this quarter if we replace all those filthy old lines and the busted and rusted and corroded and cracked and, oh, we can't possibly declare a profit if we do something like that. Just keep it on the down low and maybe they won't notice they're getting poisoned. The same with health care. Whether or not some person at the head of a health insurance corporation should be able to get a Christmas bonus so that he can afford a solid gold toilet, well, that's not an appropriate topic when we consider the essential life or death issues that attend health care. Does that make sense? I hope it does. But going way back to the government shutdown and the sequester and the debt ceiling argument, and I said that we need to recognize that there is at present an absolute insurgency in this country. It would be no less an insurgency if the teabaggers were planting IEDs. It is an insurgency in this country that is aimed at destabilizing the government, ultimately defeating it, and replacing it with some sort of nightmare dystopian vision of the Republican right. The country they yearn for is a country where the only people who can have health care are the people who can afford to pay the ridiculous premiums that have built in massive profits for the health insurance industry. The rest of us, as Sharon Angle noted, can take a chicken to the doctor. I mentioned that passage from Richard K. Morgan's Altered Carbon earlier. Quilchrist Falconer's declaration, take it personal. It really is getting personal. Here, I've got it right in front of me. There are some fun words involved. The personal, as everyone's so fucking fond of saying, is political. So if some idiot politician, some power player, tries to execute policies that harm you or those you care about, take it personally. Get angry. The machinery of justice will not serve you here, D.C. Circuit. It is slow and cold, and it is theirs, hardware and soft. Only the little people suffer at the hands of justice. The creatures of power slide from under it with a wink and a grin. If you want justice, you will have to claw it from them. Make it personal. Do as much damage as you can. Get your message across. That way, you stand a better chance of being taken seriously next time, of being considered dangerous. And make no mistake about this, being taken seriously, being considered dangerous, marks the difference. The only difference in their eyes between players and little people. Players, they will make deals with. Little people, they liquidate. And time and again, they cream your liquidation, your displacement, your torture and brutal execution with the ultimate insult that it's just business. It's politics. It's the way of the world. It's a tough life, and it's nothing personal. Well, fuck them. Make it personal. If you don't think that that ruling by the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals isn't personal, I don't know what to say to make us all understand how personal it is. We're talking about death sentences. Oh, sure, in a criminal case. What did I say earlier about hanged? There's some scripted, somewhat florid language that the trial judge repeats, and he says, "The court hereby sentences you to be transferred to the custody of the commissioner of the Department of Corrections, where you will be incarcerated until such time as the department sees fit to carry out your execution, at which time you will be hanged by the neck until dead. May God have mercy on your soul." You know what? With the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, we didn't even get "may God have mercy on your soul." We just got "go die, little people. Go die." You want to strike down the Affordable Care Act and replace it with universal single payer? I'm on board. I am right there. And I'm so damn hardcore, I want vision and dental included. I want a universal single payer that's not even going to bat an eye when a transgender person comes up and says, "You know, I need the surgery." Oh, absolutely. You know, other countries do that. Hell, I'm such a damn liberal that if you're a guy and you're losing your hair and you want plugs and you want everybody to give you the new nickname and call you Plugs McGee for the rest of your life, let's pay for that too. Let's pay for it all. It's not like you go and have medical procedures for fun unless you're that weird woman who wants to be Barbie. But you know what? That was not what the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals was thinking. They were thinking they want the Affordable Care Act gone. They want the pre-existing conditions ban gone. Children covered on their parents' insurance until they're 26, gone. Medicaid expansion, gone. Those sick freaks in the D.C. Circuit, the ones who signed off on this 2-1 opinion, those monsters want to live in an Ayn Rand America where everybody hauls themselves up by their own bootstraps, but by God has to go out and root and claw and dig and scrape and gouge to find some bootstraps in the first damn place. Said it before, I'll say it again. These right-wing tea-bagging, birther, deather, tenther, booger-eater, libertarian, John Bircher, pig-lickens, they want Haiti with cable. And right now, I'd say that they've got some pretty damned rock-solid odds of getting it. Take it personally. The because the sure proof that it isn't personal is when they say that it is personal, is when they say that it's not. You're in their way. We are in their way. Now, see, if the healthcare insurance industry could figure out a way to get all the welfare, all the corporate welfare, without having to deliver any actual healthcare, well, damn, that's just perfect. Note coming in from Marty. Talking about the guy in Ellenboro, West Virginia. Now, what needs to be done with this guy who claims that he will only make $21,000, and despite the fact that the plaintiff would only have to pay $21 a month or a year after the subsidy and make certain that he never gets more than $21,000? That's what we need to do, make sure he never gets more than $21,000. Ever. No, see, he's going to be a carpet magnate, Marty. He's just one lottery ticket away from the big time when the folks who know what to do with the damn shrimp fork will actually look at him and talk to him like he's real people. Jack in Shreveport says, in regard to the ACA, I'm with you on that. There's something out there would just as well kill people off. How can we let BP poison the Gulf for 90 days and do nothing? How could Duke poison so much water in the Dan River and piping and walk away? I'm extremely angry. That death panel bastard Jindal could give me health care with a word. You're damn right. And here's the funny thing. The Medicaid expansion and the health care, the Medicaid expansion in particular, pours oodles of money into the healthcare system of every state where it is. I think that's what turned the tide here in West Virginia. It's why GERT, Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, decided to do the Medicaid expansion. Because it puts people to work. Screw the coal industry. We're talking about decent paying jobs for nurses. And a job market for physician's assistants and certified nurse practitioners and certified nurse anesthetists and certified nurse midwives and LPNs and CNAs and doctors and hospital administrators and the people who in the building trades who build hospitals and expand hospitals. And that's a hell of a lot more people than work in any damn coal industry in this state. You have a right to be angry, Jack. You have a right not to be angry, but to be furious. And so do we all. Then again, what are the chances of getting, 10,000 pissed off people standing in a human chain around the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals to let those bastards know that we know what they're up to? And not just stand there singing Kumbaya for a couple of hours and go the hell home. Or not just doing it on a Saturday when they're not there. But doing it and staying there and not leaving. If one leaves, another replaces. Where are the left-wing think tanks with the deep pockets to fund that? Where is Occupy the D.C. Circuit? Oh, wait, they've probably got a buffer zone, too. A woman trying to get into Planned Parenthood, she has no protection against sweet Granny McCullen and her disgusting, gory, graphic photographs of fetal tissue. But these black-robed princes, by God, they've got a buffer zone, and they've got capital police to make sure you damned well observe it. Well, there's our happy little rant to close the program now. I want to thank again everybody who kept us afloat, especially in the last 24 hours. Thank you so much. First and foremost, to Mike and Kathy, and thank you to whoever dropped the dime and told them what was going on. Thank you. And thank you to everybody who responded to Mike's call to keep this operation afloat. I heard what he said last night, and I was humbled by it, and honored that you responded in the way that you did. Thank you. I hope some of you are listening to hear these thanks. If not, well, you'll get written thanks in short order. By the way, I guess Mike is not live this evening. You know what I would do with Mike being a rerun this evening? I would be tempted to turn this into an extended Tuesday on the front porch, but I'm going to be selfish here. If it was even, and I'm not kidding, if it was even 10 degrees cooler in the Horn Studio sauna, hi, Janie, or, as it's called, the Horn Studio solar furnace, I would. But I'm. You ever spent 3 hours in a sauna? Then you know what I'm talking about. So, I'll take my leave. And again, thank you all. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men at Coal River Mountain and women at Coal River Mountain Watch. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, moderators in the chat room. Thanks to Sparky, the longtime moderator of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Big doings coming up as they tour in support of, as he tours with the Di Pritchard Band in support of the album Killin' Time, on which he is the drummer. DiPritchard.com is where you go if you'd like to get the album. It's a whale of a good time. Straight up rock and roll. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Remember, Ben has never sent a bill, but there would be no Head On Radio Network without Ben Birch and White Rose Society. Every packet that passes, every stream that streams through White Rose servers. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.